episode. It's our Oscar extravaganza, I guess you would say, with my friend and fellow film critic Matt Brunson. He's the former critic of Creative Loafing, and I'll get him to tell you about what he's doing now with his site. In case anybody listening does not know, I'll let him tell you about it.
I'm formerly of Creative Loafing for centuries, decades, I don't remember how long, forever. Now I run my own website, Film Frenzy, which you can find at www.thefilmfrenzy.com. And if you're wondering why it's Film Frenzy, but the URL is The Film Frenzy, it's because somebody, of course, bought the other name, waiting for some millionaire to come and, you know, pick it up. But I don't have a million, so I'd add the. And so, yes, I'm here for this special episode that I'm looking forward to doing.
Yeah, me too. It was kind of your idea. I mean, I had something in the back of my mind. I thought I should commemorate the Oscars, but then it kind of came, the idea came and went, and then you mentioned it, and I thought, that's a great idea. Let's do it. So what we're going to kind of do here, just for people listening, we're going to kind of start this out by going through probably about 10 of the top categories, and we're going to talk about who we think will win and who we think should win if we were voting. And then we're going to talk about a few oversights, and then we're going to talk about a few awkward Oscar moments. And so that's kind of the agenda, as it were. So we can go ahead and get started with the nominees. I've got my list pulled up right here in front of me, so let me get that up. And we can go through the Best Picture nominees. I can announce them here. It's for anybody, I think most people listening know these, but you know, for whatever it's worth. We've got American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and Zone of Interest. So I'll let you take it since you're the guest and tell us what you think will win and what you think should win if you were voting.
Well, at this point, I think it's pretty safe to say that it's going to be a little Oppie or a little Opie from Happy Days, if you want, winning Best Picture. I mean, the momentum's just there. It's pretty much been there since the movie opened. Christopher Nolan's one of those that people feel it's kind of due because he got, I think, cheated out of a Best Picture nomination and director nomination for The Dark Knight, which is kind of what started the whole up to 10 nominees. And then, of course, he was up for Dunkirk and Inception. And so I just think this movie being such a serious subject, I think will be the one to prevail on Oscar night. And it'll probably sweep. It'll probably win a lot of awards, I think. As to what I want to win, that's definitely high on my 10 best. As are The Holdovers and American Fiction and such, but Poor Things would be my pick. I think that's just the most unique out there movie of the year. I just think it's just unlike anything else I've seen this year, with a really great performance by Emma Stone. It's just visually dazzling. You never really know where it's going to go, so that'd be my pick.
Yeah, that's a very good film. I liked Poor Things quite a bit. And I may say that it's the first Yorgos Lanthimos film I've seen that actually had an ending, which totally surprised me. The others just kind of fade out. So I thought he's advancing in his career. He's moving to a new place. He knows how to end a film now. So, and in a satisfactory way, I felt like the film ended in a where it logically should have. So yeah, there's a lot to embrace in Poor Things, and I liked it a lot too. I can't disagree with you on that. Oppenheimer, of course, I totally agree with you. I think that's going to be the one to beat. You know, I was lukewarm on it. Didn't hate it. Some people think, oh, Adam hates this film. I don't hate Oppenheimer. I mean, there's a lot of technical artistry on display in the film, and I admire that. You know, Christopher Nolan's style and is just kind of at odds with my personal tastes. You know, I kind of lean towards the Oliver Stone style of when you know there's biopics and that sort of thing done. I like that Oliver Stone sort of thing, and Christopher Nolan's a lot different from Oliver Stone. Well, the Oliver Stone of 30 years ago, not the Oliver Stone now. He doesn't make those kind of films anymore, so let's get that out there. But I think of Oliver Stone when he was doing JFK and what he could have done with this material, and it would have been more suited to my taste. But that doesn't mean it's a bad film. And like I said, there is a lot to admire. And the fact that, you know, an R-rated film about a historical figure could do all that this film has done is something to nothing to scoff at. So yeah, for that, you know, for that alone, I'm hoping that will encourage the studio coffers, as it were, to pony up some money for more films like this, because we need more of this type of cinema. There's no doubt about it. It's certainly been in short supply. For me, I'm the big Alexander Payne guy. Everybody knows that. I just I think everything he's done has been good to great. There's more greats than just goods. And even the last one, Downsizing, pretty much lambasted by critics. And but I think you and I felt the same way about it. We knew that it had flaws, but we both agreed that there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there, some interesting ideas. He didn't quite figure out a way to pull them all together. But you and Awkwafina, good performance there. I think you know. So yeah, good stuff.
Oh, and Hong Chau.
That's really what it was. It wasn't Awkwafina. Sorry, it's been a while. I admit. So I don't know why I was thinking it was her. But anyway, point is that Downsizing was a good film, and The Holdovers is more of a return to classic. I think Alexander Payne type stuff with Sideways was the film that I've seen the most in a theater. I don't think I've ever returned to a film two times. Having seen it three times in a theater is what I was getting at. And I saw that film three times theatrically, and that's never happened before or since. So his films just have such repeat value for me. And I know The Holdovers is something I'm going to return to every year, definitely at Christmas and maybe at other points in the year. And it's been one of these films where I just grabbed people by the lapels and shook them and said, you got to see this, you got to see it. And everybody I've recommended it to, even people who weren't aware of it, they've all come back and said, you know, that was really good. I really appreciate you recommending that to me. And you didn't steer me wrong. So, you know, I think it's just a great film. I know it's not going to win Best Picture. And Payne didn't even get a nomination for Best Director. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself, because that's one of the but we can talk about that later. But anyway, The Holdovers would have been my pick, so we can move on. That's probably my long shaggy dog story to the point I was trying to make there. So and you know me, I'm bad about that. So anyway, we'll move along to Best.
I think what's interesting is you mentioned how you tell people, you know, they should go see this. Mm-hmm. What I've noticed with this year's movies are the ones I didn't really think would catch on really are in different ways. That's one of them. You know, you're like, oh, this is too small scale for people to embrace, but it seems to have a lot of love. And Poor Things is one that I was like, oh, this is gonna be too weird for people, you know, they're not gonna like this. And I'm finding that most people I meet or just, you know, read about really like that movie too. So there's definitely something for everybody here, and everybody's embracing something, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's definitely a better crop of films than we saw the last 2 years. I'll be honestly, I couldn't find enough to really come up with a top 10 list, so I didn't even bother. The last 2 years, there were some good films, but it was hard to find a truly great film in 2021 and 2022. I felt like 2023 was more of a return to form, and there was enough to fill a list. And I was embarrassed after I made my list, because I totally forgot about one that was great. It was Fair Play on Netflix, and I loved that film. And I, for some reason, when I was making my list, it just completely escaped me until the list was already out there. And I thought, oh, well, sometimes we forget things. It doesn't mean that we, you know. So anyway, so Best Actress in a Leading Role, you got Annette Bening for Nod, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, and you have Carey Mulligan for Maestro. You have Emma Stone for Poor Things, of course, and Sandra Hüller, I think that's how you pronounce it, for Anatomy of a Fall. So I'll let you tell us what you think is going to and what should.
This one I see, with apologies to Annette Bening, one of the, you know, always also ran, never a winner, or always a bridesmaid, never a bride. I think this is really a two-way race between Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone. And I read, I think it was Entertainment Weekly's critic or something, when Lily won the SAG, they were like, this is a shocking upset. And I'm like, what world are you in? I mean, it's always been a race between those two. And I think Lily Gladstone's going to pull it off. That movie is not going to get any love anywhere else. Martin Scorsese movies do well in the nominations, but they often end up 0 for 10, 0 for 12, like The Irishman and what was the other one? Gangs of New York. Those two were 0 for 22 total. Mm-hmm. So this one's up for 10 Oscars. This is probably its best chance of winning, and she's really good. These are all really good performances. I would have to go again though with Emma Stone. This is unlike anything I've seen her do. This is like, I don't like using really the word courageous for performance. I mean, that's what they're paid to do, is to, you know, take chances. But this really is a performance that goes beyond what I'm used to seeing, especially, you know, from her. So she would definitely get my vote.
Oh, I totally agree. She's the best thing on this list, in my opinion. I mean, they're all good. I mean, I've seen them all, except for Njad. I didn't get around to that. And I think that was kind of a left-field surprise. I think that's a good example of Netflix with having their deep pockets and getting some paying for a lot of promotion, shall we say, because that's not a film that a lot of people have seen. And that's not to knock Annette Bening's performance. She's great. She's great. And I'm sure she's great in that. But it's just not a film that would have been on anybody's radar, I don't think, otherwise. And Lily Gladstone, she's good in Killers of the Flower Moon, I think, but I don't think, and Lawrence Totman, who was former critic of Charlotte Observer, we were just talking about this the other night, we don't believe that she should be in the leading role, leading actress category. She should have been in the supporting actress category, because that's basically what she is. So that's the fact that she's even in, we're even having this discussion about her being in the, I don't think she really belongs here, but maybe that's just me. But Emma Stone is the one. I think she's got a good chance at it, and I'm going to go ahead and say I predict she will win, and I think she should. So it's one and the same for me. I think both. So yeah. So there we go for that one. It'll be interesting to see what actually does happen. So best actor in a leading role, we've got Bradley Cooper for Maestro. We've got Coyman Domingo Rustin, Paul Giamatti of The Holdover, Cillian Murphy, I'll get it out, Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. And so I'll let you do your thing.
Well, I think it's going to be, how did you go through it? Cillian and Zilly?
My tongue wasn't working.
I think this is, before I thought it was probably going to be Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, because he's been around for quite a while. This is only his second nomination, which is really absurd. And, you know, you think he's probably well-respected, as many great performances he's given. And I still think he has a big shot, but I'm kind of thinking now the Oppenheimer steamroller is kind of just chugging along, and I think that's going to roll over any of the competition here. So I think Murphy is going to win this category. As for me, though, personally, this is a tough one because I rewatched American Fiction, and Jeffrey Wright's performance is just phenomenal. I mean, he does so much with just little facial inflections that are really just amazing in that movie. Having said that, I probably have to go with Paul Giamatti by a hair. Again, he's a great actor. We haven't really seen him that much like we used to. You see him like in every other picture. I haven't seen him that much lately. So it's really nice to see him come back in a leading role in a very good movie. So he would get my vote.
Yeah, he's very good in American Fiction, but you know, being such a Holdovers fan, I personally would have to go with Paul Giamatti if I were voting, but I think Cillian Murphy is going to take it for Oppenheimer, because I'm with you. I think there's so much momentum for his performance, and you know, he's one of those actors who's been steadily building up a nice body of work for 20 plus years, so probably close to 30 now, you know, and we've seen him in so many things, and I think this is his moment. You know, sometimes people just get to that point, and it's just a configuration of a bunch of different things happening all at once, and I think that the popularity of the film and the fact that he's not ever really gotten his due, and so I think that's all going to pay off for him handsomely on Oscar night, in my opinion. So we shall see, I guess, but yeah, so moving along to Best Actress in a Supporting Role, we have Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer, Daniel Brooks, Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Njad, and Divine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers. So I'll let you tell us what you think.
This is one of those where it's going to be the same on both. Divine Joy Randolph, I think, would be my pick, and I think is going to win it. I saw her. I really remember her from that Eddie Murphy movie, Dolomite Is My Name. And on my own short list, I had her as one of the best supporting actresses of the year. And then when she didn't get an Oscar nomination, I kind of was like, well, that was probably her one chance. So it's really great to see her not only back in this race, but pretty much more of a front runner than anybody in any category, because she has just been winning awards left and right. I'm hard pressed to think of one that she missed. And it's well deserved. It's just a phenomenal performance. It's the heart of that movie. And so yeah, definitely her.
Yeah, I would agree. She's so good in that. And yeah, and I second your feelings about Dolomite Is My Name too. So yeah, she was great in that. Yeah, I was surprised that you didn't go with Emily Blunt there. I know what a fondness you have for
Wow, I know. It's amazing to me too that that's her first Oscar nomination.
her. I know, right?
You'd
That
think
is
she would
amazing.
have some by now, but this is her first, and you know, it's not really. I mean, it's a good supporting role, but that's not like a real showcase role. She's done so much better, and she will do so much better.
Yes, she will. That's true. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, so best actor in a supporting role, we have Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, Robert De Niro, of course, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. So, what do you think?
This one, I think, a little to my surprise, this I think it's going to be Robert Downey Jr. I wouldn't have started the award season thinking that, but again, it's a, you know, a role effect where he's been winning so much, and you know, I think he's been around forever. He's had substance abuse problems. He's, you know, the backbone of like the biggest gazillion billion-dollar making, you know, MCU franchise, and he's really good in the movie. I don't. He wouldn't be my pick. I would have to go with Mark Ruffalo, somebody else. He's been up a lot, and I just think, I mean, they undervalue comedy a lot, and I think his performance in Poor Things is just hilarious. I mean, he had me just laughing the whole way through. So this is a good crop. I also liked Ryan Gosling in Barbie, but definitely Mark Ruffalo would be my pick.
Yeah, I think Mark Ruffalo is of all those nominees, I think he would be the one I would go with as well, because his performance is it made me laugh. I don't know, maybe it put me in a it definitely brought something interesting to the proceedings and Poor Things. Yeah, but I think Robert Downey Jr. I think again, I think it's like Cillian Murphy. I think it's two things happening at once. I think you've got the Oppenheimer train, a lot of people on board that, and the fact that he's never received a nomination or well, he may have gotten a nomination. Yeah, he got the Chaplin,
This
I
is
think.
his third,
Yeah,
yeah.
I was thinking Chaplin, and I was trying to think of the other ones, but
Tropic Thunder.
that's it, Tropic Thunder. Yeah. And so, I think it's his time. Yep. So for sure. I'm with you on that. So we're up to best director: Justine Treat, Anatomy of a Fall; Martin Scorsese, of course, Killers of the Flower Moon; Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer; Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things; and Jonathan Glazer, The Zone of Interest. So,
Well, even though Poor Things is my favorite of the year, and I Lanthimos, I think, you know, be a very, very deserved winner. I think I would go with Nolan on this one. That was a obviously a massive movie to wrestle. I think there's so many elements in that movie that worked just fine, from the performances to the story to the way the movie looked. So I would have no problem with him winning for this, because there's others in the past he should have been in the running for more, and so that would be my pick. And I also think it will definitely be the Academy's pick. No chance of anything else.
yeah, I think Christopher Nolan is probably the one to beat. Again, I think Oppenheimer is going to really do a lot of sweeping up of the awards when it gets down to it. And so I think, yeah, he's a lock, I believe. And like you said, it was a lot to put together, that's a lot of material that he was able to manage to put it together in a cohesive way that tells that story. And so yeah, it's and of course his approach and all of that. So yeah, it's an impressive achievement. Even if I didn't totally get on his wavelength, I admire what he did. So yeah, for sure. With Poor Things, I thought Yorgos Lanthimos did a really interesting job on that. That would probably be the one I would pick of those nominees, just because it was so, some of his choices were so out of left field, I guess, and he was really trying to do something different with that story. Yeah, that would be the one I would. But I do think Nolan is going to be the one to beat. So yeah. Do we want to cover animated feature film, or do we want to just skip to international feature film? I don't know about animated, you know, how important that is.
Oh, either those, or the writing, either one.
Yeah, we can, we'll just skip on to Best International. Let's do that. Let's just do that. Just The Teacher's Lounge, Lo Capitano, that's from Italy. Perfect Days, of course, from Japan. And Society of the Snow from Spain, and The Zone of Interest from the UK. So, and Germany is the Teacher's Lounge. I think I failed to mention that. So,
interestingly here, The Zone of Interest is also up for Best Picture. So is Anatomy of a Fall, but Anatomy of a Fall is not up in this category because they did not submit that as their movie, which I think obviously would win if they had.
Yeah.
This is one where if The Zone of Interest weren't up for Best Picture, I could see it going to one of the others, because this is a category they usually go more with emotion than anything, and I think some of the other movies are more emotional. But with that Best Picture nomination, I think it'll be like All Quiet on the Western Front last year, that they're not going to ignore it. So I think Zone of Interest will win. My pick, though, would be The Teacher's Lounge, which I thought was, except for the ending. The ending was very flat, but other than that, I thought it was a really riveting movie. I mean, it just, the whole thing takes place, you know, in a school, but it's one of those where it's basically a reflection of society, so you get to see, you know, themes involving prejudice and fake news and media influence and all that. So that was definitely my favorite of them.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with your assessment. Yeah, I like The Teacher's Lounge. It definitely, and like you said, the ending is a little weak. But other than that, it's a really gripping film for just about its entire running time. And I was never bored, I'll say that. So I really enjoyed The Teacher's Lounge, and that would be my way to go also. But I think you're right. There's a lot of love for The Zone of Interest, and especially with the conflicts that are going on overseas, I think, you know, that we are constantly in the news. And so, you know, I think that kind of, you know, sometimes what's going on in the real world kind of reflects what they go with. And I don't know. So anyway, it all kind of ties together sometimes. So I think The Zone of Interest is the one that's, you know, is going to wind up taking that one. So we could do, I guess, original and adapted screenplay. We can grab both of these. Original screenplay, Anatomy of a Fall, Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, and Past Lives.
That one, the Holdovers would definitely get my vote. And, boy, that's a tough one. I think The Holdovers has a great shot, but I think maybe Anatomy of a Fall, since it's going to, you know, not be up for foreign film and win, that might be the one where they give it, especially since the person who directed it, Sandra Hula, also wrote or co-wrote it. And since she's not going to win director, this would be a wave honor in her here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think Anatomy of a Fall will go unrewarded in some category, and I think this would probably be the logical one where in which it would get something. So yeah, but The Holdovers would be obviously my choice as well, because I'm such a fan of the film. So yeah, best adapted screenplay, we have American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest.
Oh, I'm sorry, you froze. I missed some of
that. Oh, that's okay. No, I'll go again. American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. That's a best adapted screenplay there.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, you would think Oppenheimer winning everything. I think American Fiction has a real shot at this one. That's again, this is one of those, oh, where we're going to reward it. I think it'd be rewarded here. The script has... it's actually been stealing a few prizes away here and there from the more tainted frontrunners, that I could definitely see that one sneaking in and winning. As for what I would want to win, honestly, I'd be just as good with either that one or Poor Things. I think they're both excellent screenplays.
Yeah. I think Oppenheimer is probably, again, like we've talked about, I think it's got so much momentum, I would be shocked if it did not take this prize. But Poor Things would be probably the one I would go with in that category, because I do like, even though that's kind of a story that's been told before, it's interesting what is done with that material and how attempted to do something a little different. So, yeah, I would, that would be my choice, but, you know, that's just me. So we could go with maybe two more here. Let's do best film editing and best cinematography. We'll just go through those just quickly. Best film editing, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
Editing, Oppenheimer, obviously, for the win. I should have the list in front of me. I don't. I already forgot what the others were.
No, I can name them again. It's Anatomy of a Fall, Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Poor Things are the other ones. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'd be fine with either Oppenheimer or Poor Things. Probably just Poor Things because I'm afraid it's going to win too little. You know, it might just win like best makeup and hair design. I'd like to see it win something else. But I think Oppenheimer is going to win this one.
Yeah, I would be surprised if it does not. So I'll go with you on that. But yeah, I think Killers of the Flower Moon will not win Best Film Editing, not for because it was barely edited, I would say. It was 3 hour, 20-minute runtime. But Poor Things, I would probably go with that one just because it's not going to get that many other awards, and I would like to see it get something. So if I were giving,
and plus it's great editing.
Yeah, it is good editing. Yeah,
so much going on in that movie. So between that and the camera work, which we'll discuss in a minute.
Yeah,
I think it's kept visually dazzling.
Yeah. So best cinematography: El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
And, yeah. Again, Oppenheimer, I think, has got this one. Although, was it the cinematographer Killers who passed away, or was it the no? It's a music score, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's Robbie Robertson. Yeah, I think he's going to. Yeah, I think. Yeah, we kind of passed over that one, but I believe he's going to get something for that. I think if Killers of the Flower Moon takes anything, I believe that would be the one.
It'd be. But yeah, in this category, I think it'd be Oppenheimer. And Poor Things on this, I thought, you know, it's a phenomenal looking movie.
Oh, yeah, I love some of the fisheye lens and all that stuff. There's some really inventive stuff going on with Poor Things, and it should get this, but I'm not sure it will. I think Oppenheimer might take this because of the black and white cinematography that and the IMAX and all of that. You know, there's a lot going on in Oppenheimer visually and, you know, the widescreen and all that. So it's, that's the one I think is going to take it. But Poor Things, I just love some of the real inventiveness that's going on there with the cinematography there. So anyway, that covers the big ones. If there's another category you want to cover, just let me know.
Unless you want to do animated.
Yeah, we could do that. Let's go back to animated then. Let's just go ahead and do it. And The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nemana, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
This one's a tough one because I didn't like Spider-Verse has been taken like it's most critically acclaimed of them. I would say it's a close call because a lot of these are really well liked. And the first one won animated feature already. It would seem like it'd be this, but at the same time, Miyazaki has come back and you know, he's the old master of animation out of these candidates. So I think The Boy and the Heron might win this one over Spider-Verse. It's a tough one.
I think you're right, because there is a lot of love for Miyazaki and the fact that this is supposedly his final film. Now, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, he said that last time, too.
He said that before, but
you could keep winning an Oscar every time he
But if it truly is, then this might be... Yeah, this might pick it up... I think that's probably of these the one I would go with as well. I think it's probably the best of that crop. But, you know, I know Spider-Man has a lot of love, so who knows? It could. And
Robot Dreams is really cute. If you've seen that one,
that one. I hate to say it, but that's just one I never got around to. So I'll have to. Maybe I can catch that one before it actually before the ceremony. Let's see if we... I was going to say maybe we can just go ahead and... Well, we talked about best music already. We think Robbie Robertson's probably going to take that, so there's probably no reason to go over that again other than the nominees. I could mention those. Let's see. Best original score is American Fiction, Indiana Jones, Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. And as I said, Robbie Robertson's the one I think is going to take that one.
Yeah, or again, Oppenheimer. It's could be one of those.
That definitely could be. I don't think John Williams is going to get it for Indiana Jones.
No, it's ridiculous how they keep wasting slots on him. I mean, he's great, but every movie he does gets nominated basically, and it's just ridiculous. They're
Yeah,
just
I
it's an
feel.
automatic write-in, and it shouldn't be because there are other, believe it or not, there are other composers working in Hollywood. But
Yes, could not agree more. And I don't think this is some of his best work, to tell you the truth. I felt like he was. I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, any John Williams is good to a certain degree, but I just felt like he was slipping a little bit with this one. It had a phoned-in quality, which a lot of the film did too. So. But enough said about that. But that covers all the major categories, and we'll just have to wait and see. Now we can get into what we think are some of the oversights this year, and there's some pretty obvious ones, and then maybe some not so obvious ones. I don't know, but I'll let you start with that and see
All
what
right.
you have to
Well,
say.
I have two that really made me angry that they didn't get nominated. One would be Andrew Scott, Best Actor for All the Strangers. That was one of my favorite movies of the year, and his performance is phenomenal in that. People might know remember him from Sherlock and Fleabag, and he's a wonderful actor, and just the stuff he has to do in this movie, which is a very unusual type of love story, love between a man and his parents, and also between a man and another man. And it's really shocking, and it's not shocking that he didn't get an Oscar nomination, but it's really shocking that BAFTA, the British Oscars, they gave this movie 7 or 8 nominations. They like nominated everything except him for lead actor, which made no sense. Anyway, that's one of my two that I wish he had gotten in. And then the other one, and again, this was like a February, March release, so of course they didn't remember it, is Rachel McAdams for Best Supporting Actress for Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. That movie came out way back when. It was one of my favorites of the year. And she did pick up a few nominations here and there, but I think it's just one of those out of sight, out of mind. But really, I think it's probably the best performance she's ever given. It's a performance that holds that movie together.
Yeah, she was quite good in that. I couldn't disagree with you on that. Certainly better than just about anything else I've seen her in. And so, I was surprised how that there was a lot of hope for that film and just didn't quite do what they had anticipated that it would. It kind of, I mean, it was well reviewed certainly, but yeah, I'm surprised there wasn't some recognition of it, as it were. But yeah, those are two. Definitely, and I'm All of Us Strangers again. Shocking that it wasn't recognized in some way, form, or fashion, because again, well reviewed and just kind of completely shut out of this year's ceremony. And I was, and they were really pushing that hard for us to see it. They sent screeners about a month before it came out, and so I think they had a lot of hope for that. Disney, Fox Searchlight, but just didn't happen for them. And people should see it. It's worth seeing. Well, of course, for me, I made no bones about this one on social media, and I, of course, got a little flack for it. It was the fact that Barbie didn't get a Best Director nomination. Again, this is a film I was lukewarm on. I love the message of the film. I embraced the message of Barbie, female empowerment. I'm all for that. It's just the execution of the film wasn't quite. It didn't gel with my sensibilities, and so that's but there's a lot to embrace there. I laughed out loud a lot during the first half hour. I felt like it just kind of petered out as it went on, and the kind of limped to the finish line for me with the song and dance routines with Ryan Gosling. It just, like I said, just not that it's bad, but just and a lot of people, because I said that, they said, oh, you're just against female empowerment. And I said, no, you're getting the wrong message. I said, I'm all for that. It's just the execution of the film. That's all. It's a totally different thing. So you can love the message of something and not. But Greta Gerwig, she is the guiding hand behind that film. Her handprints are all over it. And the fact that, and again, for Anatomy of a Fall, a lot of people are saying, well, there is a best female director. There's in the running for there's a female for best director, so you shouldn't make a big deal out of it. Well, the problem I have with this is that in 20 years, 30 years, whatever, if people look back to 2023, are they going to be talking about Anatomy of a Fall, or are they going to be talking about Barbie? That's my argument. And I don't think they're going to be talking about Anatomy of a Fall. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe 30 years from now, it will be the one that's remembered and Barbie isn't. But I seriously doubt that. So.
Well, I read the comments. People are also coming at you the other way, too, saying, like, you know, oh, why is Greta Gerwig entitled to a nomination?
Yes.
I don't think anybody said she was entitled. But I like this movie a lot. It was on my 10 best. And I think, like you, I think what she did with this movie was quite amazing. You know, I mean, she just took some real chances with the way it looked. I mean, this movie could have been a laughing stock. It could have been, you know, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, where you have something just wild and fantastic and it just goes really wrong. And the fact that it didn't, I think she should be rewarded for that. And also, we were talking about Best Actress earlier, you know, Margot Robbie not being up for Best Actress. That was a big surprise, too. That was just one of those where there are just so many good performances, somebody had to get pushed out. I would have thought it'd be Annette Bening, just like you say, because that movie was smaller, but the Academy always loves her. So I think both of those should have been up, both Margot Robbie and, like you say, Greta Gerwig for director. And they are up. I mean, Margot Robbie's up for producer for Best Picture as one of the producers, and then Gerwig is up for writing it. So they're not completely shut out. But, yeah, these nominations should have been in there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I you know, with the fact that Lily Gladstone got that Best Actress nomination, that slot should have been given to Margot Robbie, in my opinion, because, like I said, Lily Gladstone's performance is more of a supporting actress role, and I had no problem with her being nominated. She was fine in that film, but just not for lead actress, and so that's where I think they went wrong. But like I said, who am I? What do I know? But yeah, I think... But I do think they're doing a big disservice, because I feel like the Oscars should be a representation of its year, of the films that were in the cultural, you know, it should be a representation of the cultural, of that moment in culture. So, you know, years later, you can go back and look and say, mm-hmm. oh, this was the year of Barbie. And again, that goes back to my earlier argument. This is not going to be remembered as the year for Anatomy of a Fall. Fine film. It's okay, but it's not going to be the one they're talking about in my estimation. So, you know, and I think they're just, like I said, shooting themselves in the foot by not doing that. So I don't think she was entitled to it, but, you know, it was definitely a, like I said, her hands are, her fingerprints are all over it, I guess you would say. So, anyway, but yeah, I'm sorry that didn't happen. Of course, for me, Alexander Payne is the big omission for the holdovers. I felt like he really did a good job and with that material and doing things as he, you know, with his guiding hand. And he's I just don't know that Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, I don't know that belongs on that list, because it's just not that great of a film. You know, but he got in there. It's kind of like the John Williams thing you were talking about earlier. Let's throw him in there. It's Scorsese. He deserves
it. Sure. I look, he's been nominated, except for like Silence. He's been nominated for like his last 7 or 8 movies. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I think it's kind of automatic now. I mean, obviously he's maybe the greatest living director, at least one of them. But there's nothing in that movie that surprised me with anything he did. It's a great looking movie. But that certainly wouldn't have been one of my 5 director nominees.
No, I think Alexander Payne should have gotten that slot, and I'm going to hold him to it. But anyway, I'm sticking by that. So, yeah, well, I guess we'll move on to the third tier of this show, which is where we were going to discuss Oscar's awkward and or embarrassing moments, I guess we would say. We're going to go with maybe, I don't know, roughly 5. Maybe we may go with one or more than that. Just depends. Maybe a few less. I don't know, but we'll just see how it goes. But we just wanted to bring up a couple of our favorite awkward moments. And as you're the guest, I'll let you take the first one there. And we may overlap. And if we do, then, you know, well, you know, we just will, I guess.
Well, no, it's a really embarrassing moment if we overlap. we're both saying it. All right, well, this isn't really my first one, but I am wearing my Alfred Hitchcock shirt, because one of the big scandals, I think, is that he never won a competitive Oscar. When you look at all the classics he made, he was nominated, I think, 5 times. Even one of his movies, Rebecca, won Best Picture, but he never won Best Director. I mean, come on. But anyway, there were a couple incidents that I thought were really when I read about them over the years. In fact, I keep reading about them because they really made me laugh. And one of them would be in the 1957-58 ceremony. It was the year GG won Best Picture. It was they were televising, and the show ran too short, which is hard to believe nowadays, considering how it just goes on and on and on. But it was televised, and it ended 20 minutes too short, and they were all on stage. Jerry Lewis was the final host of the evening, and he had Mitzi Gaynor up there singing, I think it was There's No Business Like Show Business, and, you know, Shirley MacLaine was up there, Dean Martin, just a ton of people. And they were, like, saying, keep going, you know, you got 20 minutes to fill. And so Jerry Lewis, being Jerry Lewis, just started spazzing out all over the place. He was just, like, picking up a trumpet and playing notes and making bad jokes. And they said, like, you could see people were dancing up on stage. You got Cary Grant dancing, and you got Dean Martin dancing. And he, like, grabbed an Oscar as he went by because they had one on the podium. And it was just, like, really embarrassing. But my favorite thing about it was reportedly Spencer Tracy, you know, a very dignified actor, he was watching this. He wasn't there. He was watching it on TV. And he just said, my God, have we fallen this low? Which I just thought was a perfect punctuation mark on what was a really bizarre night.
Isn't that interesting how things have changed? Because now they're yelling about cutting it for time. Let's get out, mm-hmm. get rid of these categories. Let's get rid of this. Let's get rid of that. And there was a time when they actually had to pad it, as it were. And yeah, maybe Jerry should have gotten out his old records and did some of the miming to the records like he did when he started his career. So he could have done that. But yeah, that's definitely. That is definitely a sign of the times, as it were. But yeah, I think I'm probably going to scoop you on this one. But you know, I can't. It's one of my top moments. Is the 11 minutes? They call it the 11 minutes that ruined Hollywood producer Alan Carr's career. Although I think it was well on its way before that. But Rob Lowe duetting with Snow White in 1989. This was when Alan Carr, for anybody who doesn't know, he was the producer of Grease. He was a protege of Robert Stigwood, and then he went on, I think he began his career working with Stigwood on Tommy, I believe, the film version of Tommy, and then he went on to do Grease. He acquired that property, and of course it was a huge hit, and you know, sometimes when you have a hit, you're a lot of people are apt to be yes men or and just let you get away with whatever you want to do. So the next thing he did 2 years later was Can't Stop the Music, which was it was a musical with the Village People. The problem was that disco had died 6 months before the film was released. He had a real problem on his hands. And I always tell people that you haven't lived until you've seen the Village People, Valerie Prime, Steve Guttenberg, and Bruce Jenner in a hot tub, which you do get to see in that film. So It is a guilty pleasure for me for all the wrong reasons. I do have it proudly on my Blu-ray shelf, but I warn people. I said this is a terrible film, but terrible in a way that it's enjoyable. There's bad, and there's good. But
yeah.
Anyway, Can't Stop the Music is just it's what were they thinking? And the director is Nancy Walker, who was the Bounty paper towel lady who had never directed a film, and apparently she would just walk away from the camera and go chain smoke and let other people tell the actors what to do. And it's just, there's all these stories about it. So anyway, that was a disaster. And then he went on to do Grease 2 years later. Well, I don't know what else you can say about that. And that was an equally disastrous project. And then he kind of...
And he also had a hand in Sgt. Pepper, I believe.
Yeah, I think he worked with Stigwood a little bit on that. Yeah, they were kind of working... He was, like I said, Stigwood's protege, so I think he did have a hand on that. Yeah, or hand in that. But then he kind of had a little bit of a comeback because he was produced a Chorus Line, I think the Broadway show. I think he was involved in that. So that kind of got him a little cachet. And so his career kind of got a little bit of a boost. And so he was when you're back up on top again, what do? They hand him the Oscars. And so he produced the 1989 telecast, and it is something to see. If you can – there may be a full telecast of it on YouTube. I'm not sure. I know there's clips, but it has to be seen to be believed. It's like a septic tank explosion. And so – Yeah, but as I said, it starts out with Rob Lowe duetting with Snow White, and it goes downhill from there, folks. And he had this idea of bringing out all of these people from old Hollywood, because he was such a fan of old Hollywood, and a lot of these people really look kind of clueless, and they're really old, and nothing wrong with with people being older, but they just really weren't up to the task at hand, I think, and it was just a disastrous thing. And so after this, I think his career was pretty much done. This was the final nail in the coffin. So it's something. So it's certainly on my list. I guess the entire telecast, not just the duet with Snow White, but the whole telecast. But again, has to be seen to be believed. So there you go. Well, I'll let you go with the next one.
I guess my other one would be, it was an Oscar campaign for John Wayne's The Alamo. Chill Wills, who was a character actor, very popular at the time, and he got probably the best reviews for that movie, which, let's face it, isn't that good a movie. But anyway, so he was up for Best Supporting Actor, the only actor from that movie to be nominated. Well, he got a publicist who, I guess you could say, was a little overzealous, a little overeager. He started taking out these ads, some of which Chills didn't even know he was taking out. So he took one out where he listed in Variety and Hollywood Reporter every member of the Academy by name. And it said, "To all my cousins, whether I win or lose, I love you all. You're all my cousins. Chill Wills." And that just got a lot of people laughing. And Groucho Marx then put out his ad saying, "Chill Wills, I'm glad I'm your cousin, but I'm voting for somebody else." Groucho Marx. And so it went like this. But then the last ad, and this is just unbelievable that the publicist thought this was a good idea. It was an ad with a picture of the Alamo cast, and they have Chill Wills highlighted in it. And the text says, "We, the Alamo cast, are praying hard, harder than the actual Texans who died at the Alamo, for Chill Wills to win the Oscar." Needless to say, that did not go over well with anybody. Even John Wayne, who, didn't always have the best taste, even he was just up in arms about this ad. So they had to then run apologies for this ad, and Chill Wills never got nominated again. I wonder why.
And we'll remind people, he was also the voice of Francis the Talking Mule before the Alamo. Yeah. So he didn't get any Oscars for his voice work there either. So yeah, that's a great story. And I didn't know that one until you mentioned it. We were just bantering it up before we started recording here. And that's a fascinating story. Yeah. I guess my next one would be the infamous streaker at the Oscars at the 46th Academy Awards in 1974. This was around, I guess it was in April of that year. I think that's when they had the telecast that year. And so this was when streaking was a national pastime, as it were. Ray Stevens' The Streak had been a number one record around this time, or if it hadn't been number one, it was certainly working its way up the charts. So streaking in public was kind of in vogue at the time, I guess you would say. And so somehow, I don't think this could happen now, because I think security's so tight. I don't think they could get away with this, but somehow or another, the security wasn't paying attention or somehow, and this streaker got loose. And when David Niven was making a presentation during the 74 ceremony, there was a mustachioed man, I guess it's the best way to describe him. He shot out on the stage behind him, and he flicked the audience a peace sign wearing nothing. And the crowd screamed, and Niven was left on stage to pick up the pieces, as it were, and I'm going to read his quote here so I don't get it wrong, but his quote was, "Isn't it fascinating to think that probably the only laugh that man will ever get in his life is by stripping off and showing his shortcomings?" And it was an impeccable response, and off the cuff, as it were. So yeah, that was a moment for the ages, I would say. So you're next up. Have another one,
just the one everybody knows about, the whole La La Land being named Best Picture, and then it turns out that it was Moonlight that won. That was just really embarrassing. I mean, if you watched it, but of course I did. you thought it was a joke at first, the producer going, no, we didn't win, Moonlight won. And what it turned out behind the scenes is it said that the guy who handed the envelope with Price, Fisher Waterhouse, whichever order it comes in, they were supposed to just focus on the envelopes, but he was back there and he saw Emma Stone, and naturally he wanted to take some pictures of her and, you know, maybe even get her autograph, I can't remember. So he was kind of focused on watching her as opposed to keeping an eye on envelopes. So that's how he ended up giving another Best Actress envelope with Emma Stone's name in it as the winner out to Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, and that's the one they open. And that's why Warren Beatty stalled so long. I mean, he kind of knew something was wrong, but he didn't want to, you know, stop the whole show. So, you know, then Faye Dunaway got it, and she's the one who read it out. And, yeah, that was not a good moment. That just looked really embarrassing. And since then, they obviously got rid of those two employees. I don't think they fired them. I think maybe they moved them somewhere else. And I always felt bad for the guy's partner because she didn't have anything to do with the mess up. She was on the other side of the stage. But, you know, they both got and I'm sure now they have much better ways of making sure the right envelopes get out on that stage.
Yeah, yeah. That was something, because I was watching the telecast that night and I turned it off when they announced the winner is La La Land. I thought, oh, well, that's a done deal. And for some reason, I don't know why, I just decided to turn it back on. And I turned it back on, and they're still here. What's going on? It's and then I realized it was there was something was amiss. That was unbelievable. Yeah, that wasn't. I think it was just a couple. I was thinking about the one. This wasn't really in my the big moments, but the time they referred to. The president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences called. They were giving the honorary to. No, I think it was Dick Pope. He was up for Mr. Turner, that was a Mike Lee film, and she called him as a Dick Poop.
I've heard that one.
In 2015, that was another one, but. yeah, that's pretty bad, but and. What was the deal with Ray Parker Jr. and the forklift driver in 1985? There was something there. Somebody brought this up. I was reading an article online. Something about the ghosts clattering around to hokey xylophone runs, and he was forced to perform the entire song from inside a levitating forklift truck that he had spent more than a minute quietly maneuvering into place at the start of his performance. And then at the end, Dom DeLuise appears for no reason dressed as... what's supposed to be the Phantom of the Opera, and is banished by the ghosts by blasting electricity through its fingertips at them, or his fingertips at them. So that's pretty batshit.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, that's the one. And there's one other one I was going to mention here. Well, you know, there is Sheena Easton meets James Bond in space in 1982. That was there was a musical number there when she did For Your Eyes Only. So that's another one. Yeah, let's see. Oh yeah, the one that I can't let go before we finish here is the Patty Chayefsky versus Vanessa Redgrave. That's the one that was definitely. So a little background on this. It's now traditional for Oscar winners to use their platform to speak out on social issues. That's kind of a thing that's not out of the norm these days. And, of course, Joaquin Phoenix, a couple of years ago, he said something about bad things are bad and good things are good, something like that. It was this declaration. And, but this Patty Chayefsky was the famed – he had won three Oscars. He won for Network in 76 he won for The Hospital and Marty. So he was a three-time Oscar winner for screenwriter, and that has rarely been done. And so in 1978, Vanessa Redgrave used her speech. She won for, I believe, Julia. Mm-hmm. And she used her speech to rage against the Zionist hoodlums who had protested against her pro-Palestine stance. And so Chayefsky came up to present his award. He told everyone he was... I'll quote him here. Sick and tired of people exploiting the occasion of the Academy Awards for the propagation of their own personal political propaganda. I would like to suggest to Miss Redgrave that her winning an Academy Award is not a pivotal moment in history, does not require a proclamation, and a simple thank you would have sufficed. So that was Chayefsky telling them.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
Yeah, that was so yeah, that was. And I guess I guess one other one we definitely have to mention is the Sachin Little Feather kerfluffle for the Oscar when Marlon Brando, famously known for his love of practical jokes. And so you can't help but wonder if this was actually a practical joke on a grand scale, or if he really did care about the Native American people. I don't know. I've never been able to get to the bottom of this, whether it was just his way at a good laugh. But when he was awarded the Oscar for The Godfather in 1973, he sent a Native American woman, of course, Sachin Little Feather, to turn down the award on his behalf while speaking out against Hollywood's treatment of Native Americans. And then she later said she was not allowed to deliver the speech that Brando had written. In 2018, she delivered it for the first time, and it was 5 minutes long. So maybe the Oscars had a point. Yeah, especially if you're trying to keep it at a reasonable time. But yeah, I always wondered about that one. So anyway, those are a few of the Oscar awkward moments. And I guess another one we talked about too was the one of the only time that I can think of in probably the last 60 years that two actors tied. And that was in 1968 for the 68. I guess it would have been the 69 ceremony, but awarding the films of 1968. The Lion in Winter and Funny Girl were tied in the Best Actress category, and you had Katharine Hepburn getting awarded for The Lion in Winter, and you had Barbara Streisand picking up her first Oscar for Funny Girl. And you were telling me about an earlier one. I'll let you tell that story if you want to, if that
Yeah,
interests
in
you.
1931 or so, there was a Best Actor tie when Wallace Beery won Best Actor for The Champ and Frederick March won Best Actor for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And back then they were more open with a lot of the voting. So what they revealed was that Frederick March had actually won by one vote. And since it was so close, they just gave them both Oscars, which. It's fine with me. They're both great actors. Those are both great performances. But I just think that's funny thinking now, first of all, we don't know how votes are tallied anymore, how many votes everybody gets. And just the thought of them going, well, this guy came so close. We'll give him both Oscars. What I think is interesting about yours is Gregory Peck was the president of the Academy at the time. And there was a waiting period to become a member. But Barbara Streisand, she was basically allowed to be a member right away. And some people complained about that. Gregory Peck is like, look, he's obviously going to have a huge career. It would be foolish not to let her go ahead and be a member. And of course, he was right. But what somebody pointed out after the ceremony is that you have to assume, like most people, she voted for herself. So if she had not been allowed to be an Oscar member, then Katharine Hepburn would have won the Oscar by herself. And Barbara Streisand would not have won the Oscar, which I always thought that was kind of interesting food for thought, if that's, really the way it panned out.